should members of Congress be allowed to trade individual stocks while they're in office? Right now, they can. Some lawmakers on both sides of the aisle want to make that illegal. Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is one of them. She posted on Instagram last month, quote, "Because we have access to sensitive information and upcoming policy, I do not believe members of Congress should hold trade individual stock, and I choose not to hold any so I can remain impartial about policymaking." House Speaker Nancy Pelosi disagrees. Here's what she said when asked about it before the holidays.
Because this is a free market and people, we are a free market economy. They should be able to participate in that.
There is a law called the Stop Trading on Congressional Knowledge, or STOCK Act. It says members of Congress are forbidden from using non-public info to make trades, and it requires regular reporting of stock transactions. Pelosi said lawmakers do need to follow that. According to our guest, most of them are, but some blur the lines a little, and a few have some explaining to do. For the last 5 months, he and his colleagues have been investigating the personal finances of every sitting federal lawmaker and their top staffers. They've found many conflicts of interest related to COVID-19 info, U.S. defense policy, environmental issues, and more. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Should members of Congress be allowed to buy and sell individual stocks while in office? Why or why not? What questions do you have about this STOCK Act? What's acceptable and what's not? What do you want to see happen? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Dave Leventhal is the Deputy Washington Bureau Chief for Business Insider. His reporting on the finances of members of Congress is part of Insider's project called Conflicted Congress. Dave, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Hey, my pleasure. Good to be with you.
You and your colleagues covered a lot of ground over the last 5 months or so. What were some of the basic questions you set out to answer here?
So going back to 2020, there had been a couple of incidents, a couple of episodes where lawmakers ran crosswise into the law that you just described, the Stop Trading on Congressional Knowledge Act of 2012. And what was happening was in the early days of the pandemic, there were questions about whether they were using information that they came upon by virtue of them being members of Congress and acting on that information in a way that helped them basically game the market, make trades, stock purchases, stock sales, that would be beneficial to them personally. So flash forward about a year, we had begun to see sort of a critical mass of situations where lawmakers were just either not following this law or making trades that seemed to be, if not in violation of it straight up, in violation of the spirit of the law. And we found also too that a number just weren't complying with the law. And also, you know, in having to disclose the activity that they were by law, by their own passage of this law that they had to do, that they weren't living up to that. So that led to us wanting to really ask the question, hey, is there more going on here? And in prompting us to dig deeper.
I want to look at both halves of the STOCK Act. So one part is, as you said, members of Congress, according to this law, aren't supposed to use inside information they might get from, say, a committee hearing or something like that to influence their stock sales or purchases. How is that enforced? It seems like it might instantly have a lot of gray area there.
Well, first of all, it is very difficult to prove. There's an incredibly high standard, a very high bar for investigators being able to say Senator so-and-so or Representative so-and-so actually did engage in insider trading in a way that is illegal by federal law. And in fact, nobody has been criminally convicted of doing so under the STOCK Act since that was passed about a decade ago. The only exception would be Chris Collins, a former House member from upstate New York, who he engaged in related activity, but ultimately wasn't charged under the STOCK Act, although he was convicted in stock-related shenanigans, if you will, that landed him in federal prison, although he was pardoned in December of 2020 by then-President Donald Trump. So that's the one side of the coin. The other side of the coin, too, is, you know, even if you are able to get beyond just the insider trading aspect of all of this, there's the disclosure aspect of all of this. And the STOCK Act, as you mentioned earlier, does not prohibit members of Congress from trading individual stocks. That was something that was initially proposed. It was rejected by Congress as part of the final bill. And in the thought then was that, hey, if lawmakers are going to, in a very timely fashion, disclose the nature of their personal stock trades, then that's going to be good enough to defend against conflicts of interest. That's all fine and good, but the Stock Act's disclosure provisions are only as good as the compliance with those provisions. And we found in our reporting 52 lawmakers over the course of 2021 who did not comply with the Stock Act's disclosure provisions. Sometimes in a fairly minor way, it might be a stock trade or two. They would have been late. They have between 30 and 45 days to disclose their activity, and perhaps they were a week or two late. Others were months or even years late, and the total amount dollar-wise of their assets that they were trading, the stocks that they were buying and selling, sometimes numbered into the millions, and even in a couple of cases, tens of millions of dollars. And none of this was being disclosed in the time frame that was set forth by the Stock Act, which is Congress's own rules of the road for itself.
If I'm a member of Congress, and I'm not, but if I buy and sell some stocks, I don't disclose these things, these sales, say, by the deadline, big amounts of money in those, what happens to me?
Not much. Almost at worst for you as a member of Congress would get a $200 fine. And that would be the case whether you were a couple days late or months late. It would also be the case if you had just traded a few $100s of stocks or a few $1 million worth of stocks. So the carrot in the stick are really almost non-existent here. There's very little that is incentivizing people to follow the law. And if you don't follow the law, there's very little that is in the way of punishing you for that transgression.
Talking to Dave Leventhal with Business Insider, part of a big investigation into Congress and financial conflicts of interest, often related to stock sales and purchases. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think it should be illegal for members of Congress to buy and sell individual stocks? What kind of accountability, what kind of transparency do you want to see when it comes to members of Congress and their financial investments and assets? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. Dave, you didn't just look at the Stock Act, you and your colleagues in this report. You also looked at potential conflicts of interest where, say, I'm on a key committee working on an issue and I own stocks in a business directly related to that issue. What kind of things did you find there?
Well, first of all, we found more than a dozen lawmakers who are tasked with shaping U.S. defense policy because they sit on either the House or the Senate Armed Services Committee. They are people who also were actively investing in military contractors, companies such as Lockheed Martin or Northrop Grumman, those who make bullets and bombs and weapons systems. Many people that we talked to said this is a gross conflict of interest and they should not be doing that, although it is perfectly legal for them to do so. We found a number of very environmentally minded Democrats who are rated very highly by organizations such as, say, the League of Conservation Voters, who in their speeches and their public statements are very environmentally minded, but they were also investing, we found, in fossil fuel companies or power companies that have fossil fuels as a significant amount in their portfolio of energy generation power plants. The list goes on and on. I think one that affects everyone in a major way is that we found almost 75 lawmakers who had stock holdings right as the pandemic was taking place in the year 2020, who invested in Moderna and Johnson & Johnson and Pfizer, the three big COVID vaccine producers here in the United States, or had investments in companies that we were able to identify as being very pandemic sensitive, companies that make tests for COVID, or PPE, personal protective equipment, that was, of course, being used and still is being used in the midst of the pandemic. So that, too, raised a major issue in the minds of many of the folks that we talked to for this article as to whether that type of activity should be legal and whether lawmakers should be doing that or not be doing that while they're members of Congress.
And we've seen some lawmakers claim, hey, there's COVID news was in the newspaper. As an investor, I could have gotten this information publicly. Are there indications at all that they may have gotten some advance warning before the public got it that might have influenced their buying or selling of stock?
So what we know is, in general, members of Congress receive much more secretive or information that would be out of the public eye than you or me or any general American. It's impossible to know what they're saying in those meetings, or what they're hearing, or what they're reading when they get secretive information or classified information. So unless you're in that room, it's almost impossible to tell. And therein lies really the rub here. You have people such as Nancy Pelosi, the House Speaker, who say, look, we can, as lawmakers, read the news as well as anyone else. We're not doing anything that is illegal. This is a free market economy, and lawmakers should be able to participate in it as well as anyone. The other side to that is, well, lawmakers are elected to represent the people. They are not elected to represent their own personal financial interests. So whether it is a perceived conflict or an actual conflict, lawmakers should hold themselves to a higher standard, so this theory goes, and they should effectively abstain from engaging in this, or Congress, the argument goes, should ban lawmakers, ban itself from making these types of trade, so that there is no issue in the first place.
We're looking at potential financial conflicts of interest involving members of Congress and their staff. Dave Leventhal is our guest, Deputy Washington Bureau Chief for Business Insider, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. There have been efforts to make it illegal for lawmakers to buy and sell individual stocks while they're in office. They fell short. They still can do those things. Do you think that's a good idea? Would you like to see things change? What would you like to see done to avoid financial conflicts in Congress? What questions do you have about existing laws like the Stock Act and other measures to prevent conflicts of interest? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're talking about some new reporting on financial conflicts of interest for members of Congress. Business Insider spent months digging through financial disclosure reports for each sitting federal lawmaker and some of their top staffers. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think it's appropriate for members of Congress to buy and sell individual stocks? Do you worry about it raising ethical questions, conflict of interest questions? Join in at 800-642-1234. Dave Leventhal stays with us, Deputy Washington Bureau Chief for Business Insider. He's been working on Insider's Conflicted Congress Project. Let's go to your calls now. Louis is with us in Oconto. Louis, hi.
Yeah, I believe they should have to put their individual stocks in a blind trust and have it managed by an outside interest. Doctors have to do that. They used to have drug companies come in and wine and dine them, and that's kind of went out the wayside because there was a conflict there. I believe there's a conflict. There probably was a conflict in stopping Line 3. If you had an interest in that oil company, you really wouldn't want to stop it, even though you know it might be the best for the country.
Louis, thanks a lot for the call. Louis, referring to a pipeline there. But the blind trust idea, Dave, what kind of options are there out there for a member of Congress?
Lawmakers right now can put their assets into what's called a qualified blind trust. And a qualified blind trust is something that Congress itself has said is sort of the highest defense against having a perceived or an actual conflict. It would be money that is not only put into an account that is governed by an independent trustee. So therefore, the lawmaker has not only an arm's length relationship, but really no relationship with his or her own money, cannot control it. But also, too, the trust documents are published publicly. Anyone can read them. And it's approved, the trust, by either the House or the Senate Ethics Committee, depending on which House the member is in. So although that is an option, the answer to the question of, well, how many people have in Congress have availed themselves to creating a qualified blind trust? We ran the numbers, we checked every member of Congress and only found about a dozen who have gone ahead and created such a trust. It is expensive to do so and it takes some time, but most members of Congress just simply don't choose to go that route at this point.
Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Wendy joins us now in Neenah. Wendy, hello.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I worked for many years before retiring back in Wisconsin as an ethics counsel for a federal agency in Washington, D.C. And obviously what I was working with were the ethics laws that apply to executive branch employees, which are a little bit tighter than what currently applies to Congress, although the Stock Act also applies to members of the executive branch. It seems to me that we want to hold our elected representatives just as responsible, if not more, since they're creating the laws, as we hold members of the executive branch who are employees of the government. I've seen a lot of problems over the years, especially under the criminal conflict of interest statute in the executive branch. But there are certainly are situations in the legislative branch that mirror what I saw in the executive branch and were not handled in anywhere near the same fashion.
Wendy, thanks a lot for sharing that experience. I appreciate it. Dave, are there efforts to raise the standards for members of Congress? I guess that would have to be a law, though, passed by Congress.
It would be, and Wendy's absolutely correct that the executive branch rules and regulations, rules of the road, are different than in the legislative branch in Congress. And in many cases, they are more stringent on the executive side than they are on the legislative side. Congress is its own cop on the beat. Congress is its own referee, and Congress alone is in the position to strengthen these rules if it chooses to do so. There are a couple of different bills that at this very moment are pending in Congress. They're mired in committee. They have not been debated in any full-throated type of fashion on the House or the Senate floor and seem to be going nowhere fast, at least at this point. But there are at least a handful of members of Congress who are making this an issue, not the least of which is Elizabeth Warren, the senator from Massachusetts, who's been very outspoken in her belief that that the rules should change. But this is not a Democratic and or Republican type of an issue. I mean, this is a truly bipartisan phenomenon that we've found, both in terms of the members of Congress who do choose to trade individual stocks. Democrats and Republicans do it almost straight down the middle. And also those who have violated the Stock Act's disclosure provisions. Democrats and Republicans have done it almost straight down the middle as well. So in a way, there's a lack of incentive for a bipartisan solution in that you have both Democrats and Republicans who, perhaps understandably, perhaps not, are concerned that if they do something that is going to restrict their activity or if they do something that could really hurt the other side, that it's going to come back to bite them in the end. So in a way, the choice here is for Congress to do nothing as to do something that is going to be strong and decisive when it comes to individual stock trades among members.
Talking to Dave Leventhal from Business Insider about potential conflicts of interest facing members of Congress. Dave, you went lawmaker by lawmaker and state by state with a number of criteria. What did you find in the Wisconsin delegation?
So we ranked every member as part of conflicted Congress on a set of standard metrics across the board with every member. And Wisconsin's delegation did pretty darn well, actually, by our ranking. We gave everyone a grade of either green, yellow, or red, solid, borderline, or danger. And only one member of Wisconsin's delegation fell into either the yellow or the red levels. Senator Ron Johnson got a borderline grade, a yellow grade, for a Stock Act violation that we discovered one of his staffers had made. Also, too, part of our methodology factored in whether the lawmaker had a qualified blind trust and whether the lawmaker traded individual stocks. Senator Ron Johnson does not have a qualified blind trust. Again, that's very common among members of Congress, and he does choose to trade individual stocks. So our rubric gave him a borderline grade. As a result, all the other members in the Wisconsin delegation, both Republicans and Democrats, got a green solid grade.
Time for one more caller. Rose is with us in Menominee Falls. Rose, hi.
Hi there. I believe that Congress people should not be penalized from participating in our economic system, such as buying and purchasing stocks. I mainly feel that we, as with many other things, we already have enough laws. They just need to be enforced better. And so I do not believe we need any more laws regarding this. We just need better enforcement.
Rose, thanks a lot for the call. And Dave, with the existing law, like the Stock Act in particular, is there any talk of more enforcement, whether by congressional ethics committees or by the Justice Department?
And that argument was made by many of the lawmakers that we talked to, that, hey, we don't need more laws. We don't need to go and create a system where lawmakers are limited in what they can do when it comes to the buying and selling of stocks. And they felt that way, even despite the fact that many of the companies that they invest in spend significant amounts of money lobbying Congress and buy for significant government contracts, too. But put that aside here for a second. The enforcement mechanisms, at least in our reporting that we found, are very weak. And if it is going to be the case going forward, that lawmakers will be able to continue to trade and buy and sell in individual stocks, the related but separate issue of whether the internal enforcement gets better because it's demonstrably and objectively flawed in what we found, that would need to change too. And there's very little talk, at least at this juncture, of Congress doing anything that would strengthen that aspect of the Stock Act.
Rose, thanks for that call. And Dave, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Dave Leventhal is the Deputy Washington Bureau Chief for Business Insider. We talked about the financial conflicts of interest facing some members of Congress. We've got a link to Insider's Conflicted Congress Project, by the way. You can find it at WPR.org/Central Time.